This is the podcast from JNS Pediatrics. This is the November 14, 2014 podcast from JNS Pediatrics. My name is Natalie Pincham, and I will be reading summaries of three articles on Chiari malformation, oncology, epilepsy, and surgical technique. Chiari malformation 1 and autism spectrum disorder, an under-recognized coexistence, by Meyer Jayarao and colleagues. The diagnosis of symptomatic Chiari malformation type 1 can be challenging in some circumstances. For example, in patients with autism spectrum disorder who have impaired social interaction and communication difficulties, such a diagnosis can be extremely difficult. Currently, the American Academy of Neurology, the Child Neurology Society, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the American Academy of Pediatrics do not recommend magnetic resonance imaging as part of the routine evaluation for autism. At the University of Missouri-Columbia Healthcare, 125 children with autism were evaluated using brain MRI over a 13.5-year period. 9 patients, or 7%, demonstrated cerebellar ectopia, or Chiari malformation. This incidence exceeds that in the general population, which ranges from 1% to 3.6%. 5 patients were symptomatic and therefore underwent suboccipital craniectomy, C1 and/or C2 laminectomy, and duroplasty, after which they had improvement in their symptoms and cognitive function. Chiari malformation and autism can coexist, but because of the difficulty in identifying symptoms in autism, Chiari malformation may be under-recognized. The authors of this study emphasized the need for awareness of the possible coexistence of Chiari malformation and autism. Communication among parents, primary care physicians, neurologists, neurosurgeons, and autism specialists is very important to identify patients with symptomatic Chiari malformation. The supraorbital eyebrow approach in children. Clinical outcomes, cosmetic results, and complications. By Brian DeLauhe and co-authors. The ideal cranial approach in children should limit tissue damage but provide a wide enough exposure, making it minimally invasive yet maximally effective. The supraorbital eyebrow approach is a modification of a classic approach that utilizes an eyebrow skin incision and an anterolateral supraorbital craniotomy for exposure of the subfrontal corridor. Many have utilized this technique in adults with very good clinical outcomes. However, its appropriateness in children is unknown. DeLauhe and colleagues retrospectively reviewed 54 cases in which children had undergone a supraorbital eyebrow craniotomy to evaluate clinical and operative outcomes, cosmetic results, and complications. In a total of 51 cases of resectable lesions, 44 surgeries resulted in gross total resection, and 7 resulted in subtotal resection. Cosmetic outcomes were excellent. In all cases, the incisional scar was barely visible at 6 weeks. A minor bone defect on the forehead was observed in 3 cases. The frontal sinus was never breached, and no CSF leaks or wound infections were identified. The authors conclude that the supraorbital eyebrow approach is extremely effective in limiting local tissue damage, maximizing exposure, and achieving desired results in properly selected cases in all pediatric age ranges from infants to teenagers. The supracerebellar transtentorial approach to posteromedial temporal lesions in children with refractory epilepsy by Alexander Weil and co-workers. Neoplastic and developmental lesions of the isthmus, posterior parahippocampal, and lingual gyri, which form the posteromedial part of the temporal lobe, are often associated with epilepsy refractory to pharmacotherapy. However, surgical access to this brain region is limited. The vein of Labbé limits retraction of the temporal lobe to access a lesion in this region, and transtemporal approaches may result in visual field and language deficits. The supracerebellar transtentorial approach allows direct access to tumors of the posteromedial temporal lobe without increasing the risk of visual field deficits and of retraction injury to the temporal lobe or cerebellum. Described initially by Osargil and Yonekawa, the authors used this approach to resect tumors and areas of cortical dysplasia causing epilepsy refractory to pharmacotherapy in children. Complete resection was achieved in all 5 patients, all of whom were free of seizures at the last follow-up. There were no complications. The authors review the relevant brain anatomy and surgical technique involved and highlight the advantages of the supracerebellar transtentorial approach when compared with other approaches to this challenging location. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.